Ted, this is Seymour. I just listened to these tapes which you sent Helma with the series of photos. I must say that I found them fascinating. This is by far the best picture that I have got. I've got to start here again. I recorded most of this tape and then found out that somehow it wasn't recording. Perhaps I won't be quite so profound on this going around. In reviewing the things which have happened in your area, I note that your tapes covered the period of the Chinese New Year, and that you hoped that things would give that the breather during that period would give you a chance to get set for any renewed violence by the Viet Cong. Unfortunately, this does not seem to have happened, as we know from all the newspaper stories, plus what we hear from Helma almost daily. As far away as I am, it really is a little bit difficult to figure out what is actually happening there, and certainly just as difficult to try to come up with any ideas in my own mind as to what the answer to all of this is. I must say, however, that I question how effective these strikes in North Vietnam are going to be. It seems to me, from the history of guerrilla warfare, and I have read it pretty extensively, that the way to fight a guerrilla war is not to extend the area of operations. This seems to be the effort historically of most countries who are attempting to combat a guerrilla fight, especially when the fight is not going too well. Now, as I said, this is my impression, and I'm not prepared to say that I have any better answers. Certainly, I hope that the attacks which are being made in North Vietnam will have some effect and will tend to slow these people down. But to be very frank, I am pessimistic. My own feeling about this business is that we are faced with a choice of whether South Vietnam must be held in accordance with our national interest. If it is, then we ought to make an all-out effort. If it isn't, we ought to get out. If we are going to make an all-out effort, then I would far prefer to see the Viet Cong defeated on a confrontation on the ground where they are doing their dirty work. I know the value of our Army aircraft, and I don't mean to discount it at all, but I do not believe that the Viet Cong or any guerrilla force is going to be defeated from the air. We see constantly talk about how successful the helicopters were in Algeria in supporting the French, but the sad results of Algeria was that the French didn't quite make it. I think that guerrilla warfare is basically ground warfare, and if there is to be a military success, it is going to be success on the ground. As I said, if this thing is important enough to us, then I would think that we ought to be willing to move ground forces in to work with the South Vietnamese to eliminate these guerrillas who appear to be growing daily. I do not discount the willingness of the South Vietnamese, but they certainly don't seem to have be too effective. I think that if we had some American units there who were attempting to cope with the problem, we might find that they were more successful and that their success might in turn inspire the South Vietnamese. I realize, on the other hand, that there is always a problem in a situation like this, since, as you pointed out in your previous tape, it is so difficult to determine who is the good guy and who is the bad guy. Nevertheless, I would not hesitate to say that if we could get some U.S. forces in there, infantry forces, not glamorized, no airborne, if you'll excuse me, or air mobile, or rangers, or special forces, but just plain infantry, imbued with the tactics which we taught at Benning and which we have used successfully worldwide, I think that we might then have a chance to cope with this business. I wouldn't want to say, not knowing too much about it, I certainly wouldn't want to predict that it would be successful, but I just cannot feel that the way it is going now, we are going to do much more than keep on supporting another man who is trying to do our job for us, and who perhaps, as you so well pointed out in your discussions on those Montagnard tapes, doesn't really understand what we're talking about and is not clear in his own mind as to who is his friend and who is his enemy. I don't mean to be either critical or philosophical about anything anybody is doing, but I suppose, like everybody in this business, especially the combat development business, I am trying in my own mind to develop answers which I think might be effective, at least from a military standpoint. I might say that from the exercises which I have run on counterinsurgency, I am impressed with the value of intelligence. And the intelligence has got to come from the local people. If they are neutral, or if they are against the government, then the situation is almost hopeless. Somehow, one must get them to give enough information about the guerrillas so that the government can cope with them. When you are fighting the guerrilla in an ambush which he has arranged, it's too late. You've got to get to him before he has got a chance to get organized. And the only way that this can be done is from the local people. These people may be rough and tough, but they've got to eat, and they've got to get even a minimum of supplies. Chewing a eucalyptus roots or whatever they have there is no way to survive. Well, so much for tactics in the war. I hope that if you can have time, you can put something on a ribbon of about the same quality that you did for Helma, but looking more toward the military aspects. I am sure that the people in the Combat Development Command who are doing what they can to assist you, believe it or not, would be very, very interested in hearing this, and perhaps would, I think more than perhaps, would be definitely assisted by the type of information you're putting out. So far as that promotion is concerned, I presume that you were rather disappointed, and I was too. I, needless to say, I was cheering you on, not only because, not out of friendship, but because I think you should have made it. It's a little bit hard to look at these lists objectively. Of course, I have no personal interest in them, but I do feel that all the things we talk about, the hard work and excellence and so on, should be rewarded. I cannot help but feel, however, that while there are many, many good people on the list, and probably they're all good, nevertheless, there is a reward for being a graduate of West Point, at least on this list. There are some of the people on there, some of those with whom we were at Benning, at least one, who definitely could not have made that list under any objective criterion. Incidentally, you commented in your, one of your tapes that you were just thought you had about one or two more cracks at this thing. You may be a little bit pessimistic about that. Wilson Hawkins, the oldest man on the list, is 54 years old. He happens to be from Combat Development Command, and he's not a West Pointer. So you see that you've got 6 or 7 more years to go if you want to wait that long. We have seen Helma several times, probably once a month anyway, and I guess Vera talks to her every evening, or she talks to Vera, and she seems to be getting along all right. She's very, very concerned about all these pieces she's working on, and I think that she is also becoming impressed with the fact that even though all these girls, that you discount all these girls on these various tapes, there isn't one of them that comes along but what there isn't a Montagnard girl or a girl with slit skirts or something like that. I believe that they have used to have an old saying that the further you were away from home and the longer you were away from home, the lighter color the girls got. Now, whether this is true in among the Montagnard girls or not, I really don't know. But nevertheless, with the custom about this ring and all this business, it just seems to me that you've just got to watch your step. I notice a lot of attention on your tapes and in your pictures to our Army aircraft, including your comment, of course, that ours are getting bigger and the Air Force are getting smaller. There is very, very much emphasis on that here in Washington. As you know, the Air Assault Division tests are completed and the report has gone in. I have no idea what will happen to the report. However, with the trends as they are, I wouldn't be surprised to see an air assault division created, even if it is at the expense of one of our current divisions. All this means is we'll need more pilots, more aviators, and more aircraft. But as I mentioned earlier on the tape, whether this is the way to combat the Viet Cong, I don't know. The Air Assault Division, in its description, is supposed to be particularly equipped for operations of this kind. Certainly, you want to have supporting aircraft, but whether you can afford the expense which this entails, considering the reduced ground fight capability you get, I don't know. I'm sure that you would be in a better position to comment on it than I could, and probably better than many of those who contributed to an analysis of the Air Assault Division. It also seems to me that there is one feature of what you are confronted with which is very interesting, since, strangely enough, it applies not only to guerrilla war, but to nuclear war, if we can ever fight it. That is a question which you and I have discussed more than once about how you protect small units, dispersed units, from infiltration. The newspapers and your recent experience indicate that this is a terrible problem and one which cannot be waved away by coming up with the usual cliches of guards and listening devices and so on. We must come up with a better way. In our book, if you'll remember, we have units dispersed all over the landscape for nuclear war, and I'm not sure that we ever really considered the problem of how they would combat infiltration. With what you are faced with there in Vietnam, perhaps in coming up with a solution to that problem, if you can come up with it, you will be able to develop an overall solution to small unit tactics. I guess that's the key to the whole business anyway. Small unit tactics are still basic, and perhaps from the U.S. side at least, because of the mission which we have in Vietnam, we have tended to forget that this is the basis on which all operations are conducted, even when you are using sophisticated aircraft and all the other high-priced things with which we are supporting the South Vietnamese. Well, I'm getting to the end of the tape, and I'm going to sign off here. Wish you a lot of luck. I know you're doing your usual good job, and if there's anything that I can do to help, why, you just holler, although I can't imagine what it might be, since without being on the spot, it would be very difficult to make any comment. Well, so long, and if you can get a chance to send me a tape, particularly on the military things, I sure would appreciate it. Vera sends her regards. She's right here with Hellman. They've listened to what I've said, so if I said anything wrong,